please. Thank you, Bruce, for leading us in those songs. And thank you all for being here and being a part of our worship time this morning. As I ended the first service, or the first time I got to present this sermon this morning, if you ever come for both services, you know both of them are pretty much identical. So anyway, I thought that probably was a little more negative than I meant for it to come across. So let me apologize up front if that's what happens. But then as we were going through this discussion in class, I think Paul is probably a little bit negative here in his, he's really coming down and saying, hey, think about these things. Look at these things. We're going to look at that this morning in just a little bit more detail. But turn, if you will, over again once more to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And if you're in a class this morning, and again, apologize for any mix-up. If you studied lesson 2, that was fine. I'll apologize for Joe, too. That's not the last time I'll have to do that. So I'll go ahead and take care of that this morning, and then we'll go on from there. But you probably looked at this text, or maybe at least part of it, and we're going to look again and try to glean some thoughts from this. The story was once told of a woman who was driving over the Cascade Range in Oregon. And this happens quite a bit when you're in that state. She ran into a snowstorm. It was a blinding snowstorm, and she became very frightened. She was looking all around, and then finally ahead of her, she caught a glimpse of a snowplow. She thought, aha, there's my path to follow. I will follow this snowplow. He's clearing the roads. I'll be able to see where I'm going. I can watch his taillights and kind of get an idea of where I am and where I'm to be going. Well, she did this for a while, and the snowplow was careful to continue on. He was clearing the way. And after some time, the plow stopped. The driver got out and walked over to the car. He asked the lady the question. He said, ma'am, where are you going? She said, well, I'm on my way to Central Oregon. He replied, well, you're never going to get there following me. I'm plowing this parking lot. So what we follow is important, isn't it? Who we follow is important. Take that in a lighthearted way, and that was meant to be, but it is important, the things that we follow. And we're going to look at that and see that very thing in our time this morning. Some of you probably watched maybe a football game yesterday, or will today sometime. If you're a football fan, you know that's that time of year again. The games are on everywhere. And you may see the offense run that play, and they hand off to that running back, and he goes way more than 10 yards back and forth behind the line of scrimmage, but is tackled having never made a yard of forward progress. Do you ever feel like that in your life? Who are you following? What are you following? Where is your life headed? Let me ask you this question. Have you ever found a Christian group that doesn't have any problems? Let me ask you another question. Have you ever found a group in general who doesn't have any problems? If so, you probably better not join that group, because you're going to bring them down. You know, that's just the way it is. There are problems that arise. There are things that take place. There are difficulties. But what do we do with those? How do we handle those? That's the very thing that Paul is talking about here in this first part of the first letter that he wrote to the Corinthians. Before we read that, though, let's go back to Proverbs chapter 6. I want to read a passage here from verses 16 down through about verse 19. And one that you've probably looked at before and are familiar with this passage. The beginning of verse 16 of chapter 6, it says, these six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations. Feet that be swift in running to mischief. A false witness that speaketh lies. And he that soweth discord among the brethren. As we turn now to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, I want to think of these sins that we've just looked at. These sins that are strongly spoken about. And ask the question, do you see any of this following over into this group that Paul's writing to at the church of Corinth. And then we'll apply that even one step further. Do we see that in our lives today? Do we see that as we strive to live a Christian life with our group here at Sunset? Let's go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and begin there at verse 10. You'll notice here, if you're looking or reading from the New International Version, it may have a heading, something that has to do with divisions in the church. So he's writing about some very serious things, some things that are really needing to be dealt with at this time. But there in verse 10, he says, let me read this from the King James. It says, "Now I beseech you," or other versions might say, "I exhort you, I appeal to you, I plead to you." Then he uses the word brethren. I think it's interesting that he addresses them as brethren. In doing so, what is he doing? He's saying, you're really a body, you're unified, you're a group. You should be headed in the same direction, you should be looking at the same things. You should have the same things in mind. So that's interesting that he would use that word. But then he goes on, "By the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you." If you go back and look at the Greek word for this word divisions, it would also have the meaning of that there be no open break, no fracturing of the church. All is together, unified. That's what we're looking at this morning, the idea of unity. Reading on, "But that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment." Verse 11, "For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions," or depending upon your version again, possibly quarrels or factions among you. Now, we don't know a lot about this house of Chloe, but Paul mentions that person specifically by name and said, "I've come to learn about this through this group of people." I think we should commend them for their courage and devotion. They didn't try to hide any problems. They were burdened about them. They went to the person straight and said, "Paul, there are problems here. Help us out." Verse 12. "Now this I say," or this is what I mean, "that every one of you saith, I am of Paul," or "I follow Paul, and I of Apollos, and I of Cephas, and I of Christ." You know, here the divisions were caused by believers following different leaders in the church. Some were following Paul, others were following Apollos, still others were following Peter, or also known as Cephas. You know, we know quite a bit about Paul. We know that he was very intellectual. You can see that in his writing. He was probably a brilliant man. He was courageous in the things. He was bold to speak. Peter was sort of a fiery preacher. He hadn't always been that way. He was sort of maybe a little weaker at first, but he'd become a rugged preacher of the gospel. Apollos was one of the great preachers of the apostolic church. He was not an apostle, and we don't know just a whole lot about him. We can imagine that he was a great preacher. And all three of these men probably had strong personalities. But that's not what caused the division. You can almost hear this group as they were talking. You can almost hear this group as they were talking amongst themselves. The first group, their claim to fame might have been something like, "We're of Paul, and therefore better than you. Anyone knows Paul is a great doctrinal preacher, and that's the only kind to have." The second group might have said something like, "Well, we're of Peter, we're of Cephas, and you can brag about your doctrine and the eloquence and all of that that you want." Or excuse me, the second group was Apollos. I'm about to get ahead of myself there. They were divided. I can't even keep it straight this morning. Said, "We're of Apollos, and anyone at any sense will agree that Apollos is an eloquent preacher, an eloquent speaker, and he can preach circles around Paul any day." And then the third group saying, "We're of Peter. You can brag about doctrine and eloquence all that you want, but there's just nobody as down to earth and as practical as Peter." And then the fourth group might even be pictured as looking down their long spiritual noses at the other three and saying something like, "We're of Christ, and therefore look to no human preacher to lead us or to free us," and not even giving those others so much as the time of day. Think back to the verse that we looked at in Proverbs just a few minutes ago. Chapter 6, beginning at verse 16, there were several things listed there. These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven, an abomination unto Him, a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and the one that soweth discord among the brethren. I think if we look at that list and then compare it to what we're looking at here in 1 Corinthians, we could say there's probably at least two things that were in common. Two things that the list in Proverbs mentions that maybe people were struggling with here. One is obvious. The sowing of discord. There were divisions. There were factions. There were quarrels. There were contentions. We know that. Paul makes that plain. He wrote that he'd been told by the house of Chloe that there were contentions among them. So that is one of the things that obviously was in common with the verses that we looked at there in Proverbs. What does it say about that? God hates discord among the brethren. God hates discord. A powerful word, isn't it? A strong word. Someone once wrote the following. It says, to live above with saints we love will certainly be glory. To live below with saints we know, well, that's another story. You know, we think about that. We sometimes have trouble getting along with saints here, brothers and sisters in Christ, the family here. What do we expect throughout eternity? The psalmist exclaimed in 133 and verse 1, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Also, Paul urged this when he wrote the Roman letter to the believers there. He said, let us make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. Romans chapter 14 and verse 19. Well, he says every effort. Does he say just give it a passing glance? He says that should be number one. That's what we're striving to do. If at all possible, live at peace and mutual edification. That's the kind of attitude as Christians we should take. Not the one that we always take. Not the one that is always maybe the easiest, but the road that should be chosen. There was a book written just a few years back, probably about 20 years ago now, and this book dealt with conflict resolution, specifically in the church, and it was entitled Tell It to the Church. And the authors of this book came up with a 10-step plan that would turn a disagreement into a feud. I thought it was interesting as I read those. He said, number one, be sure to develop and maintain a healthy fear of conflict, keeping it all inside of yourself until you explode in anger. Number two, if you must state your concerns, be as vague and general as you possibly can. Number three, never divulge the names of anyone that makes a statement to you. This will ensure that it can't be verified, that you heard it and are repeating it correctly. Number four, assume you know all the facts and that you're totally right. Number five, announce your willingness to talk and discuss the problem, then close your mind to their point of view. Number six, do your best to show that the other person is doing this because they're jealous of you. Number seven, judge their motivation as a way of getting even with you for something you may have done. Number eight, keep track of every angry word, every angry look, and every angry gesture. Number nine, always view the issue as a win-lose struggle. Avoid possible solutions other than yours at all cost. And number 10, pass the buck whenever possible. 10 steps to taking a disagreement and turning it into a full-blown feud. Do we see that sometimes in our lives? Does that ever touch maybe you? In the way you handle things. He goes on there and says in the 13th verse of chapter 1, he asks some questions in this verse. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were ye baptized in the name of Paul? Some pretty stiff questions that he presents. And of course the answer to those he would say is no. The answer to all of those. Paul did preach of one Christ. Apollos, the same Christ, and Peter, the same. There but one Savior and one gospel. How then did the Corinthians create this four-way division? Why were there contentions among them? Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 10 says, only by pride cometh contention. And I think this brings us to the second thing that we can say was in common with the list that we looked there in Proverbs chapter 6, that of pride. You think pride was maybe stepping in the way? Pride was getting in the way of this group? Those that were proud saying, I follow Paul. He was the first one here. He's the one that got everything started. No, no, Apollos, no, it's Peter. Do you see pride entering the picture? C.S. Lewis once wrote, pride is essentially competitive. It's competitive by its very nature, while the other vices are competitive only, so to speak, by accident. Pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. There was a clever salesman who once used the competitiveness of pride to his advantage. And he would close hundreds of sales with this line, let me show you something several of your neighbors said you can't afford. Pride enters in, doesn't it? No matter what aspect of life. And I think it was a part of what they were dealing with here at the church in Corinth as well. Pride is a cause of discord. What did it say about pride back in verse 17 of chapter 6 of Proverbs? God hates a proud look. Someone once said, pride is the only disease known to man that makes everyone sick except the one who has it. We so often look at others, so often judge others, so often we'll point our fingers and say, there's the problem, there's the issue, without looking at self. A story was once told of two ducks and a rather egotistical frog that had developed a pretty good friendship. They were worried about their pond drying up, and sure enough it did. But the ducks knew that they could easily fly to another location. But what about their friend, the frog? Well, finally they devised a plan. They came up with a scheme that the two ducks would fly with a stick between their two bills, and that the frog would hang on to the stick by his mouth. All was going well until a man looked up and saw them in the sky. The man said, what a clever idea. I wonder who thought of that. The frog opened his mouth and said, I did. That was the end of his road, wasn't it? Do we sometimes find ourselves in that position just with the pride? Christians are followers of Christ. There's no room for pride in our lives. You know, it's natural sometimes to be proud. Natural to look back and think, wow, I've accomplished a lot. I've done a lot of things. I've been able to accomplish many, many good things. Because we're followers of Christ, we sometimes will take pride in that. In a certain way, if we're showing that pride through our sharing it with others, that's one thing. But we take pride in birth and rank, but it's said of Jesus, he was a carpenter's son. We take pride in possessions, but it's said of Jesus, the Son of Man hath no place to lay his head. We sometimes take pride in respectability, but it's said of Jesus, can anything good come out of Nazareth? We take pride in our personal appearance, but it's said of Jesus, he hath no form nor comeliness. We take pride in our friendships, but it's said of Jesus, he was a friend of publicans and sinners. We take pride in our independence, but Jesus gave himself to people all the time and even had the woman at the well draw water for him. We take pride in our position, but Jesus said, I am among you as one who serves. We take pride in our degrees, in our learning, in our education. Jesus never went to college, and it's even said of him, how knows this man letters, having never learned to read? We take pride in our success, but it's said of Jesus, his own did not receive him or believe him. He was despised and rejected. Jesus Christ is the greatest example ever of humility. Notice that humility, not pride. Pride enters in and bad things start to happen. Pride enters in, divisions maybe even begin. One thing we can be sure of this morning, that together we can stand, but divided we will fall. You may say, well, that's cliche, but that's so true. So scriptural. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 12 said, though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Psalm 133 and verse 1, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. What is it that unifies us this morning? What is it that brings us together? We can think of several things that might bring division or several things that might bring distraction. In this particular case with the Corinthians there, it was following a different leader. If you read on into Corinthians, you may have talked about that in your lesson this morning. Paul even chastises them and says, we shouldn't even be talking about this at this point. You should have come beyond that. You should have grown and matured beyond where you are. But he met them where they were. He dealt with them where they were. What might cause divisions today? Could be numerous things. Could be several things. Could be losing focus on what's really important. You know, I sometimes wonder, and I think we're doing great things with our ministries here at Sunset. But I wonder sometimes if we look at the church plants and say, wow, look at what we've done in Nixa. Look at what we've done in Brookline. Look at what we're planning to do in Willard. Willard, I guess that direction. Do we sometimes leave God out of the equation? Do we sometimes lose our focus? In all of these, what is the focus? Reaching the lost. That's what we're striving to do. In our mission work, what are we looking at? Reaching the lost. That's the commission left for us. There are three things, three very simple things that I think would help us in being unified in our thinking. I want to close with these this morning. Number one, don't lose your composure. Don't let pride stand in your way. Don't let your own self-importance get in the way of the Lord's priority for His work and for His church. Don't lose your composure. Number two, don't lose your comprehension. We need to keep the big picture. We're about Jesus. Our hope is in Jesus. Our hope's not in progress, but our hope is in the Lord. We're to bring glory to His name. Not in our own name, but in the name of Christ. And number three, don't lose your commission. Our mission is to proclaim Christ, to live Christ, to be the new creatures He has created us to be. We have a charge to keep and a God to glorify and dying souls to save. And I think that's probably what Paul's saying here. Don't worry about the man. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about Apollos or Peter. Glorify Christ in all that you do. Let's finish the reading this morning, beginning there once again at verse 13 so we can pick up the paragraph break. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized into the name of Paul? I am thankful that I did not baptize any of you except Crispus and Gaius. So no one can say that you were baptized into my name. Yes, I also baptized the household of Stephanas. Beyond that, I don't remember if I baptized anyone else. Now pay close attention to verse 17. For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel. Not with words of human wisdom, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. What unifies? What brings us together? We know that answer. It's the cross. Why do we lose sight of that from time to time? We get caught in the rabbit trails that go here and there. And that will happen. We've got to continue with our focus. That's what Paul is telling them here. The power is in the cross. The power of the cross is what unifies. It's the reality and power of the cross is the only thing in the church that we should be concerning ourselves with and boasting about that. Conflict shouldn't be feared. It shouldn't even be avoided. It will happen. When that doesn't work, it should be resolved. Resolution is the result of intention. Nothing is ever resolved by ignoring it. When we're talking about a group, we're talking about a group from its leaders on down. We must be unified. We must come together, focusing upon that cross and what it means to each and every one. The cross that Paul talked about to this Corinthian group is the same cross that means so much to you and I today. That's the invitation. That's what brings unity. That's what brings us together as a group of Christians. That's what Paul's saying you should be interested in. Don't worry about these different men. Worry about Christ and what His death, burial, and resurrection means to each of us. That invitation is open yet today. I don't know your situation from a group this size. We may have some here this morning who have not yet put on Christ through baptism or willing to take that step this morning. The power of the cross, that's what brings unity. Where many here this morning are Christians. Many here this morning have taken that initial step. But along the way, we lose sight. Along the way, we get caught up in many things. We want to pray for you this morning if you have that need. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?